I'm your average action movie survivor. When I'm not busy trying to avoid massive superhero battles with people getting thrown through walls or dodging giant robots about to step on me, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Do it now, because the Robopocalypse is coming!
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com.
Let us begin this podcast,
okay.
Shall we?
Sounds good. Yes.
So my name is Christian Horn, and this is Part-Time Fanboy. And on the line, I have my good pal, Mark L. Miller, who is a comic book scribe and is best known to fans out there for being, well, the writer of the Ain't It Cool News horror column. Probably one of the best horror review columns on the internet, on the interwebs, and the editor-in-chief of the Ain't It Cool. Come on, don't be modest. People love your column. It's like the best thing on that site, dude. It's the best thing on that site, in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I like a lot of stuff the other guys do as well. But yeah, I put a lot into those columns every week. Just, I mean, it exhausts me a lot of times just trying to see that many movies in 1 week.
So. Yeah, I don't know how you do it. But you are also, before that, you were the editor-in-chief, I would say, of the Ain't It Cool News horror column and a reviewer as well. So
the comics and the horror.
But you started off in the comics, and that's how we met, because I used to write for you and submit my little reviews to you every once in a while about how
they were good reviews. You were one of the best.
How angry I'd be about what they did with the Justice League this week or whatever. No, good times. No, but I'm so glad to have you on. It's been we were catching up before I started recording, but it's been an age. I mean, it's been an age since because I think the last time I actually spoke to you was the sort of crossover that we did, and that was like I want to say like a year and a half ago, or could be even longer than that. Which we sort of did a crossover with the horror column, the Ain't It Cool horror column, and the comic column. I got to sit in. But I'm so glad to have you back because this past weekend, a new movie came out, and I wanted to discuss it because I'm a fan of the franchise, Alien Covenant, which is the latest release in the Alien Xenomorph movie franchise. I don't even know what we call it, because Prometheus, I'm just going to call it the Xenomorph franchise. This is like the eighth movie that they've made.
I guess it is. Yeah. I mean,
the Alien versus Predator stuff.
We include that?
Yes.
Yeah. That's kind of, I don't know if we should include that.
Well, they're in there. You can't.
Those are some rough years. Yeah.
I never saw those. I never saw those.
I think I did, but none of them really like left any impression on me, other than the fact that, like, I think one of them had Bishop, like the original guy that was supposed to be like the model for Bishop in the movie. So like he was a antagonist in one of the movies. So I don't know. I all I remember is that a lot of it was just, you know, I think one happened in the snow and the other happened in like a small town in the woods. And
I never
saw none of them were. Yeah. None of them were very exciting or anything. Nothing compared to this movie that we're talking about today.
Well, I have to say that this is the first Aliens movie that I've seen in the theater since Alien Resurrection. So that will tell you how much damage Alien Resurrection did to my love for Alien. It's funny because I just said I love the franchise, but I think I just love the creatures and how freaky and scary they are and sort of the mythology behind them. I didn't even get a chance to see Prometheus in the theater because at the time my daughter was, you know, much younger, and so I wasn't able to get to see it in the theater, but I did see it on Blu-ray eventually, and I was kind of, I mean, just by the visuals, I don't know that I was blown away by the story so much, but I think I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of interesting. But I think that at one point in Prometheus, like, the map maker gets lost, and I was like, the map maker gets lost? The cartographer can't find his way around? Like, it definitely had some of those horror movie moments, which this one does as well.
It does.
Where I was just like, what? Like, I was knocking on my skull. But what I wanted to ask you, because you've seen so many horror movies. I mean, you've seen more horror movies than I'll ever see. But what's your experience with the Alien franchise? I mean, which one did you see first? Did you see Alien, the first one, like in the theater?
I think I'm not that old. I think I saw it on like HBO or something. And I remember like really jumping at that one scene where Tom Skerritt is in the tunnels. That scene stands out to me, and I remember like the ending where
were
the
you
cat
like a kid though or a teenager?
Oh yeah, I was a little kid.
Oh wow.
Yeah, okay. I was pretty young when I saw it, and then like the part with the like the cat at the end, and there's like they're all trying to she's trying to sneak into her spacesuit without like before the alien is, and the alien's kind of like moving really slow. I don't know why, but it's like it's taking its sweet ass time just to kind of like make its way through the cockpit of the ship at the end of that movie with Sigourney Weaver.
It was a man in a suit, but anyway, go ahead.
But this is so it's just I do remember, like, since then I've seen the movie a million times, and I love it every time. It's so much – it's like everybody says, like, what's your favorite sci-fi movie? And that's definitely one of them. And but also, like, what's your favorite horror movie? And that ranks up there too. And I think that there are very few that straddle both of those so well. Like, basically it's just a monster in a house story. And that and it's like they're in a fixed location. It's very simple. It's like, you know, they're trying to get rid of this monster in the house so that they can all go to sleep and continue their journey. And it's I just like the simplicity of that. And I don't think they've ever I guess Ridley Scott said, like, in going into this movie that they wanted to move more towards that, I guess. But this feels like kind of like a combination of Aliens and Alien and Prometheus, basically.
Well, before we jump to that, let me ask you, do you like Alien or Aliens better?
I think I like both of them as they're in their own particular way. I think seeing it covered a lot of ground just in those two movies. And I even sort of liked the third one, even though I know everybody like really hates on that one about killing off Hicks and Newt.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there are elements of that. I mean, it wasn't until that movie that they really introduced the aliens kind of adapting to whatever it is that they were implanted into, because they had that dog one, that dog alien that kind of ran really fast in the tunnels. And I think that was interesting that they did it that way. But ever since then, that's what they've been doing with this, with the alien creature. It's always like an alien gets into a predator and, you know, then there's like the alien predator creature or an alien gets into something else. There was the, like, in Resurrection, there was that white alien thing that Sigourney Weaver gives birth to. That was just gross. I mean, the ending of that when it gets sucked through that little hole, it just, for some reason, that just grossed me out so much.
I gotta watch that again for some reason.
It's just, there's a lot of cringeworthy moments in that movie. I think that the basketball scene, where she's playing, She's playing Hellboy in basketball.
Ron Perlman.
Yeah, and so it, like stuff like that. I just
playing Hellboy.
It was just too over the top, and it just really did show that like they were really searching for ideas by that time.
Yeah.
You had the badass military stuff in the second one. You had the kind of like monster in the house, monster in the spaceship kind of stuff there that was established in the first one, and after that it was just kind of like rehashes of each of those, you know, like Alien 3 was more like Alien, it felt like, where they were all trapped in one location and fighting an alien, and then Alien Resurrection was like they were going through, they were swimming and they were doing all that stuff, and
yeah.
So
it just I kind of yeah, remember that
it just didn't I mean it seemed like they just didn't know where to go.
Well, it seems like with Alien 3 in particular, obviously they kind of crapped the bed when they killed Hicks and Newt. I think like when I saw it in the theater in Westwood in California, it's a very specific movie memory that when that, and you know, it was like opening weekend, theaters were packed when you had to line up and like stand outside. And I have a very specific memory of that happening where they discover Newt and Hicks and they're dead, and all the energy in the theater just like, and people, a groan just like went through the audience. Like it was, it's a very specific, but the thing that I will say about Alien 3, I think that if it had been a movie that did not have the name Alien in front of it, it would have been a huge hit, because I think that it works really well as like a monster movie. Like it's really well directed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's David Fincher that did that.
Yeah.
David Fincher did that, and it had The Rock in it. It had a couple of other, I think it had Charles Dance. Is it Nance? That guy, he was in Game of Thrones, and he was in, he was also in Pirates of the Caribbean. Oh God, what's his name? I think it's Charles Nance or Dance.
Charles Dance.
Yes.
Clemens, that's who he played.
Yeah, the guy, he was also in The Golden Child.
The
bad guy in The Golden Child. Not as good a movie. But yeah,
he's the king, or the right-hand of the king, or whatever. Game of Thrones.
He's the, what do you call it? Yeah, I forget. The Lannister, that gets killed in the toilet.
The dad. Baghdad.
So,
good memory.
They had some great like actors in that movie. So I think that you're right. I do think that the whole Newt Hicks thing really put a bad thing on it. But I don't know. I mean, it would have been weird having a little kid there in a prison with all of these like hardened criminals and stuff. But you could have had her age to be like a little bit like of a teenager or something.
Yeah, I don't think you want a female teenager in a prison on space. I think that makes it even worse. I think a little kid would have been better if you want.
The whole thing was a weird setup. But I mean, what can you do? They did what they did.
I know
that they wanted to kind of rewrite history and have Neil Blomkamp do like a version. I would have liked to have seen that, but then I don't know. I'm a sucker for continuity in these things. That's what I love about
You're a comic nerd.
I am. I'm a comic nerd, but also like I love. That's the reason why I like the Friday the 13th, because they actually had like a throughway story.
Oh my god!
Sort of through that until like the later installments. So it's like I like to think it's all part of one big story, and I just like it that it keeps on going on and on, and now it's going backwards in the sort of thing.
It
took a huge leap backwards, and now we're telling a more modernized, I guess, story. But that's one of the problems that I had with the movie. But I guess we'll get to that.
Let's talk about the movie. I mean, now it's called, this one's called Alien Covenant. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there's a double meaning in there somewhere. It's based off of, it's called Covenant because the ship that, all the craziness, but the ship that sort of discovers the planet that the aliens are on is named Covenant, right? And so you've basically got, what you've got is, for reasons unknown, it's sort of a colonization ship, right? And there's like 2,000 people on 2,000 and a little bit more than 2,000 people in cryo sleep. And in the beginning of the movie, you're sort of like introduced to the crew, the primary crew of the ship, because they're coming out of their sleep for, I can't remember the exact reason why they're coming out, but there is, and there's a synthetic on board who is played by Magneto, Fassbender. What's his first name?
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender. Yeah. Yes. And basically, he is in the process of waking them all from their cryo sleep, and it kind of starts off with a bang. Because does the solar flare go off first, or do they wake up from the cryo sleep? I can't remember. No, you just saw it this afternoon.
I just saw it this afternoon. Yeah. That what happens is, I guess there's a solar flare. They've put up the solar panel like sails to kind of absorb some, to get some more energy for the ship. And this solar flare hits them broadside, or like head on, which just rips through the solar panels, and it just fucks up their whole systems, and that, and then like people are just kind of James Franco is just killed. It's like
James Franco's in the movie, but he's asleep, and you only really get to see him in like
one flashback.
It's
not really a flashback. It's a like a replay on
like a video. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like on a touch screen, sort of like a video photograph.
That's another sort of James Franco screwing with the audience thing. Like, I'm in this movie, but I'm not really in this movie. Yeah. And you're sort of left with the fact that what ends up happening when they wake up from the cryo sleep is the solar flare sets his sleep pod on fire, and he's burned alive in the most horrible way possible in front of his wife, trying to get him out of the pod, and you're sort of like, oh, that's the first thing that you think of is like, wow, they killed James Franco.
There were some really intense scenes at the beginning there, and I think that was really well done. I think that there's like a handful of actors that did really well. Yeah. And then there were just like the other guys that you knew they were going to die because
the red shirts.
They hardly got any they didn't have any like lines or character to them. They were just the other guys. It's like you have Tennessee, who is Danny McBride, who's
great
awesome.
He's great.
Yeah. And then you have James Franco, who's supposed to be the leader of the group, but he dies. And so that everything goes on to Billy Crudup, his character. Yeah. And he just he's just not a good leader. And I think Crudup does a good job of really playing a kind of a it's a little bit like Paul Reiser's character, sort of. It's like one of those, sort of the cowardly kind of character. He's not as self-serving.
I don't buy him. I don't think he's a coward. I just think he's like awkward, and I think he's not confident in himself.
Yeah.
He's filled with self-doubt. Like Paul Reiser's character was just a swarmy kind of like sort of like, hey, how can I, get the best out of this situation? Billy Crudup, you're right. I think Billy Crudup did a really good job playing this character that was sort of like thrust into the leadership role and was not ready for it at all. And
it's funny because it's like just that's a rich character to play. I think, and he did it really well. I think that's a more interesting character than somebody who's just like totally gung-ho a lot of the guys that you saw in Aliens. I think that's just much more nuanced so I appreciated that kind of attention to that kind of passing the torch to somebody who is just really not that ready for leadership. And then one below him is what's her name? I forget her name.
I can't remember the Daniels.
Daniels. I'm looking up everybody's names.
I know, me too.
Is that
Catherine Waterson?
Catherine Roderick. Oh, yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
Who has big poofy hair.
Yes, the worst haircut in the Alien franchise.
A poofy hair bowl cut.
The worst haircut. And in the future, they have not gotten rid of bowl cuts. Yeah.
I mean, that was a horrible haircut.
She has a really horrible haircut.
And I'm looking at her IMDb and page she's beautiful. Right now. She's beautiful. She's got long, like blondish brown hair.
And she looks like a little doughboy. Which, you know, sort of, I think what they were going for is to make her very sympathetic, because from the outset, her character is, her husband is basically torched alive, like right in front of her. And
you're like, oh, she got a bad haircut.
Well, I think that's part of it. Like, I think that they're obviously, because, you know, part of the sort of thing about the Alien and what makes them great is that the sort of female lead character is always thrust into the position of, you know, like, I'm going to take care of this. Like, we're going to, you know, I'm ready to go, you know, and sort of like gets put into a position to, spoilers, which, you know, we spoil everything on here anyway, to defeat the alien, right? And I think that that sort of like little doughboy haircut, the sort of makeup job that they did on her, which was not, you know, too complex, she's kind of like pasty faced, kind of made her seem like a little child, you know, and more vulnerable.
She was definitely an unlikely hero. I mean, you definitely see her at her lowest at the beginning after she's lost her husband and just really trying to put the pieces back together and keep it together for the crew, or what's left of the crew by the time the end of the thing. That's what kind of also interested me, is just the fact that like all of these couples lose like their significant other in one way or another. Like Billy Crudup loses his wife. Danny McBride loses his in that first initial kind of, the first time we see the aliens.
Yeah, the first
wave. And she loses hers. And so it's like all these people are dealing with this immense loss. They were supposed to have like a new beginning, and it was supposed to be really exciting and full of like hope and all this stuff. And they go out there and they find this and they end up losing everything. So,
Well, we should say like Danny McBride goes out to fix like the solar panels that were damaged, and he gets this rogue transmission, and they analyze it, and they're basically like, look, it's this planet that is basically like Earth, and it's much closer than the planet we're trying to colonize 7 years away. Why don't we take a detour and go that way? And so so you've basically kind of got Billy Crudup in a situation where nobody wants to get back into the sleep pods because he just saw somebody burned alive.
Yeah, so he's taking a shortcut now. They're going like, okay, well, let's do the next best thing and see if we can do this. Instead of just hanging out for 7 years while they just kind of all of them age and all of them are just bored as hell for 7 years, which could be end up, they could all kill each other by then.
Well, they were going to go back. Yeah. None of them wanted to go back to sleep after they saw what's his face, get torched alive, her husband. And so they decide, Catherine Waterson's character decides that she is like Daniels. Her name is Daniels. Last name or first name, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. She's the only one to say, like, I don't think this is a good idea, which, of course, is ended up not being a good idea. But the thing is, it's like, it's such a horror trope, right? Where the lead character, the one that you know is the lead, the one that's going to, you know, says, like, I don't think we should do this. And sort of the sort of stereotypical dumb boss in every movie, TV show, or whatever is like, look, we got to do this. Like, it's very much like Jaws. Like, you got to close down the town. I'm not closing down the town. It's the 4th of July. Are you crazy?
Okay. So now I'm going back to Aliens again. Do you remember Gorman in Aliens? I didn't. He's the guy that he was supposed to be the leader, but he was like, as soon as the aliens started attacking, like he obviously got shooken up and he froze.
Okay, I remember what you're talking about now.
Yeah, and so it's one of those. That's what kind of Billy Crudup is, like a more sophisticated version of that character, where he just can't deal with, like, he probably looks really good on paper as a leader, but then like once on the battlefield, it's like, you know, it's a mess.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
But I I like those characters. I did like, let me see.
I love the female Danny pilot.
McBride's. Yeah.
I wish they'd done more with her.
Yeah. But Danny McBride's wife in this, who is.
Yeah. She's the female pilot.
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah. Yeah. That's Amy Simetz. She was in, I think that's her. Is that the girl that was in, or that the actress that was in You're Next?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. You're right. You're right. Yeah. So I did see You're Next. That's a great movie.
It is a great movie. Yeah. I just realized that was her. But she does a great job as well as a very sympathetic character. It's like, so what happens is they go and they start exploring this planet.
And just things go bad.
And things go very bad ever since then. But the thing is, and that's where things started happening, where I started rolling my eyes a little bit. It's like
we're going to get into it. Yeah, here we go.
Every chance they can get, every horror movie cliche they can come up with to get these guys alone, like one at a time, is done in this movie. And it's like, it's almost laughable. Like the guy says, I'm going to go take a piss.
Yeah.
And then like goes off and then like he steps on one of these pods that.
Well, does he even take a piss? Cause I was like, didn't.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. He sits to smoke. Yeah.
And once again, it's Hollywood's message. If you smoke, you should die. And it's like, that's the reason why he dies. He lied about smoking.
Yeah.
And so now he dies. But
he lied about smoking.
The problem is they didn't have to do that. He could have just been walking along with her and stepped on one of those things and had it like get into his ear.
Okay. I need to rewind even a little bit more than that from you, because the sheer, as a sort of like, obviously I'm a sci-fi fan. I used to read a lot about like science and space exploration when I was a teenager and a kid and whatever, and have seen all the Contagion movies and am freaked out by nuclear war and la, 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 all this stuff.
You do
not go down. Even if you breathe the surface, you do not go down and step on an alien planet without a mask. Because idiot knows that there are these things called germs.
Yes.
And exactly. That you can get infected by anything. Like, it's why so many Native American people were wiped out when we landed on.
You're right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So for me, it's like that moment of idiocy where they kind of like disembark from the shuttle and they have no masks, they have no protection, and nobody even says the typical line of like atmosphere breathe. Did you analyze? Beep, 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 beep. You know, nobody's got a tricorder or anything. You know,
nope.
And they just step off the shuttle and they're like, okay, sounds good. And I'm like, no, nobody does that. And there's no. Yeah. There is no, you could have just written like a couple of lines of dialogue where somebody pulls out a tricorder or analyzes from up high, like, are there any microbes? Is there anything? A futuristic tech, like, you know, like, and nobody does that. And from that moment, that's when my big eye roll started happening.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but the thing is they did that in Prometheus where they came out, they didn't know, they were cautious. And then there was a big thing that, hey, it's breathable air in here. And so they immediately take off their helmets and then they get, you know, they get infected then.
But that's, again, that's a stupid thing because
it is.
Just
it's
because
totally
the air
stupid.
Is breathable doesn't mean there's not germs, Mark.
That's true. I know. I agree. I totally agree.
The moment it's just like, how did the cartographer get lost in Prometheus? The map maker does not get lost.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one that knows. So anyway, like that sort of like was that was when my sort of like, nobody checked the script on this. You know what I mean? Like nobody handed it off to the sci-fi nerd or a science, you know, person or called Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, and paid him his fee to look.
Everything has to be cleared by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It really does. I really think it should. Because, you know, you're absolutely right. Like that scene is a very big horror trope where he's like, yeah, I got to go take a piss. And then, you know, the whole like. I guess I have not seen Prometheus since it came out on video, and I wanted to watch it before I went to see this, but it just didn't work out that way. But yeah. I didn't remember them being sort of like spores or microbes, and when that happened, were they?
I don't think they were. That's one of the things. That's one of the biggest things that bothered me. I don't think they were. I've only seen Prometheus once, so. And that was like quite a while ago. And I know that I was bored to tears in certain parts of it. and then just kind of like, I didn't care. And then it like sort of rushed in trying to be an alien movie towards the end of it all. And like all of it was just like kind of a mess. But I think that what bothered me about this is that that's like the most, I guess the most streamlined way for the alien to infect somebody, lay their egg inside them, and then have them burst out and immediately start growing. Yeah. Everything was at such a rapid pace in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the title, when they were, I remember seeing the first Alien, and you're sitting there and you're seeing like little like casting and all this other stuff, and the side part of the A shows up, and then and it's really slow and it's really paced. It's really taking its time. And then at the end they finish it up and it just says Alien. I mean, it takes for a horribly long time for them to finish up the title of that.
Even at
the title stage of this, everything was sped up. Like the title, like they basically tried to do that kind of A, like the parts of each letter, and then fill it in as it goes along, but that was sped up. And so if it feels like they had evolved to the most streamlined, the most effective way of infecting people, and the most effective way of growing quickly and becoming like the full bodied, full big alien, it's like, so where do you go from this? This is supposed to happen before Aliens. And it's like, why is it growing so fast? Why don't we see like the period of time? I mean, it took I guess we're leaping forward a little bit, but Billy Crudup is infected. He's infected, and like within 5 minutes, he's already has a chest burster, and within 2 minutes later, it's like a full grown alien. It's just like the span of time that it just isn't. Everything is sped up. That this should be the way aliens were in like part 3 and 4, maybe, if they're evolving. Not in the first like kind of like baby forms, like the first like evolved kind of things for them. Yeah. So I don't know like how they dumb it down to be like the man in the suit that is in the first one. Like if they're going to come full circle, but apparently he's signed on for a third one. It's supposed to be one of three the second three. So I don't know. But
it's interesting because, well, again, there's a lot of things that I sort of had problems with. And it's interesting that you note the speed of the sort of gestation period of the alien speeds up in this one. But there's other things within the structure of the film that drove me nuts that happened so slowly where I was just like, okay, we need to sort of wrap this up. And, you know, one of the things is that Fassbender, they discover David, the sort of, because this is sort of a direct sequel to Prometheus. It happens like 10 years later. But David, the sort of android, whatever they're called, that was left in Prometheus, they discover him, and he basically comes to rescue them from an alien that has burst out of someone. And there are scenes between David and their android, Walter, I believe that's his name, Walter. Walter. That just go drag on, where he's teaching him how to play the flute, and I'm just like, really? And there's definitely scenes, you know, the flute thing especially, where it was amazing to behold, and it's beautifully shot, and it's fantastically acted. But come on, you have to admit that there was a part of you that was thinking like, they're just doing this to show that they can do it, because like Fassbender hands the flute to the other Fassbender, and they're both holding on to the flute at the same time, and they're talking, and this is sort of like where Walter's sort of worldview that he's developed in the past 10 years, the android that was stranded on the planet, sort of comes to the front, comes to fore, and it takes too long. Like it's kind of a beautiful scene the way it plays out, but at the same time, it just takes too much of the narrative. And it's like, for an alien movie, it's like, dude, we got to speed this up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think that, like, I think it was interesting what the David character was definitely the most fascinating character in Prometheus, I think. And I think it was good that they carried it over. It's weird though, because if you look at it, if you look at the first Alien movie, the big threat is the synthetic person you have, like, what's his name? Who's the guy that it is in the first one?
I don't know, but you got to stop asking who these actors are, because I can't remember.
I know. Sorry.
Say the synthetic.
Yes, but it's like he was the main threat in Alien.
Yeah.
He was the one that kind of let him into the ship. He let the alien in John Hurt, who was infected with the alien, into the ship. He was the one that kind of emulated them as the perfect life form. He was like the one that like kind of really attacked Sigourney Weaver and let the alien loose in the ship. John Hurt was the one that was...
Oh, no, he's the one that got blown up. Yeah. Sorry.
The other one was... Is it Ian Holm?
Who was it? Ian Holm. Okay, yeah.
I believe it is. Yeah, okay. Ian Holm. So, anyway, he is the one was the bad guy in that movie and the main threat. So having David be the main threat in this movie and putting like a face on the horror is kind of going back to its roots, and I kind of like that. At the same time, though, I think that I agreed. It slowed things down. It seemed like it wanted to get the best of both worlds by kind of coming to like a full circle sort of thing, where David is kind of seeing the fault in his own creator at the very beginning, like when it first the opening of the movie, when he's talking to Guy Pearce.
Yeah, which is a really nice scene. Yeah.
And I think that was a really good scene, because it just showed like how he had independent thought. And then like later on, Walter reveals that because of there were so many problems with the original David model, that they had taken away creativity, they had taken away independent thought, that they didn't want them to be as human. They wanted them to be a little bit more logical. So I like that, because there were just subtle differences between David and Walter. And that really, I think, propels the entire story as far as the motivation of these guys.
I agree with you on that, but I think that the scenes where their dialogue played out could have been directed much more sort of like briefly, sort of like with a bit more energy. I mean, it's those scenes that sort of like drag the narrative down. And there's definitely a problem with the beginning of the movie too, where once all these sort of, you know, burning up the guy in the sleep chamber, all that happens, and they're sort of starting to discover, you know, they're sort of building the Billy Crudup dynamic of like, I'm the flawed leader, and nobody's going to listen to me, and they don't really have respect for me, and they discover this new planet. That stuff is where the movie kind of like, it's interesting, it builds character, but at the same time, it's just dragged out. You know what I mean?
It really is. I mean, I think it's a good... I don't know if it's an hour, but at least it's like 45 minutes or so before you even get a whiff of an alien. It's really like a lot of build up to that. And I agree. It's weird, because it's like you can't dive into it like Aliens, where it's like all of a sudden there's a million aliens and you're just mowing them down with machine guns. But at the same time, you can't go like so slow like in the first one, or this is even slower than the first one, where the first one, it's like it's a discovery and they do all of these things. And I understand they didn't want to repeat what they did, but you're right. I do think that there are there's a really long lull at that beginning where they're debating about going to the planet. They're debating about whether they want to go into cryosleep again or and then everybody's mourning the death of the people that died. And so you go through almost like a whole movie there, and yeah. then you get to the thing. But the other thing is that, like, when David and Walter are playing the flute in, like, yeah. his private quarters, it's like, what are the rest of the guys doing? Like, yeah. They're just kind of, I mean, are they just like kind of just sitting there? Like, they follow this weird guy into this temple full of these like alien people that are burnt to a crisp.
Yeah, nobody asks any questions.
Yeah, nobody is like saying like, who are all these fucking people that are dead here? Exactly. You know, and it's like, yep. like, what are these aliens? I mean, answer some freaking questions. And instead, he just goes off with Walter, and they have a little moment together.
Yeah.
That was really kind of like it's like everybody else just hit pause, like you hit pause on everything else that's going on for this like 15-minute conversation between David and Walter.
Yeah.
And then you get the other girl saying, "I'm gonna go wash up," and you're like, they might as well just say, "I'm gonna go get fucking killed by an alien."
Exactly. She needs to have a T-shirt sign like yeah. "Alien Bait." Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just. I mean, you know, as soon as someone says, "I'm gonna go do this away from the group,"
yeah,
they're gonna
die.
And then, like towards the end, I mean, it's all about like it's almost an anti. couple movie, because everyone is always splitting up from the group
yeah.
and getting killed, leaving like a widower or a widowee to like for like each couple is broken up one after another. And it's just, I don't know. It just feels like there were way too many characters. Yeah. And because of that, I only cared about like maybe three of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was like Danny McBride, Billy Crudup, and this other actress who I keep
Catherine Waterston.
Yeah, well, Catherine Waterston.
Let me go back for a second and address the sort of like, because you know the first Alien movie is kind of slow, but it's yeah. in service of building tension. It's in yeah. service of discovering things that, you know, remember at the time, nobody had ever seen anything like this. And as the movie goes yeah. on, you know, the sort of deliberate sort of like pauses that happen, you know, build the tension, like what's going to happen, where Aliens is like a complete action movie, like roller coaster. Alien is, you know, that slow buildup, that slow burn. This yeah. movie is like a really slow burn. It's like, wow. And a yeah. lot of it is, a bit flawed. But first of all, I should say that I liked the movie. Like, I did not hate yeah. this movie. Like, I enjoyed it. And much of what I enjoyed of it was the design. It's beautifully shot. I mean, it's beautifully mm-hmm. shot. The actors are fantastic. Ridley Scott knows what he's doing. He knows what to do with a camera. He knows how to, you know, have scenes with actors. But, like, in this movie, it just seems like there's so many moments where it's like you're dragging things on at the character building moments, and you're sacrificing the tension and the like, oh my God, what's going to happen sort of moments. You know what I'm yeah. saying? And
yeah.
The first Alien doesn't do that. Like, it's very much, everything is in very deliberate service to having you discover this, having you sort of like, oh my God, this is a terrible thing. And just, yeah. you know, having dread sort of settle onto you. And this kind of comes across it's not as successful in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I think that they could have, I mean, it really doesn't take much. I mean, they could have been a little bit more creative and just said, okay, maybe the gestation period is a little slower. So yeah. maybe they battle a bunch of face huggers.
Yeah, you know,
maybe there's, instead of little aliens running around, they're like face hugger spider things that are kind of jumping around like spiders and jumping towards the faces. And they do that yeah. a little bit, but then they rush right past and they evolve past that.
Yeah.
And like, they never even have the snake like alien thing that, burst from John Hurt's chest.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I recognize that.
It bursts out
too.
And it's like fully into this skinny little, this little guy. And like the scene that was really just kind of weird was when the thing bursts out of Billy Crudup's chest, and David puts his hands up in kind of like praise of this little,
yeah,
little
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And this little thing like raises its hands.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. Are they like saying hallelujah? Are they saying hi to each other?
Well, okay. Before I get into the point that I want to make, because you're bringing up the whole like David sort of like big, you know, what the sort of center plot of the whole thing is, or the center plan is. The other thing that I need to address is, like, you have this character who is the pilot. I thought we called her out earlier.
Amy Simetz
or something. And she's really good in the movie, and she's like a hard ass and whatever. And then you've got sort of the medical officer that, when the dude who went to smoke starts looking like he's sick, is like, are you okay? I'm like, he's sick. Don't go near him. You are a science officer. You're on an alien planet. Don't touch him. Don't go near him. He goes into quarantine. And you actually have people asking, like, should we be enabling quarantine protocols? And it's like, yes. The answer is yes. Immediately.
Exactly.
don't, you know, you're on an alien. So they don't quarantine the guy. They bring him back. They put him in the medical bay. And the medical officer, who is Billy Crudup's wife, you know, puts him in the medical bay. And it's at that point where the pilot, who's the hard ass, immediately starts acting completely against character and starts freaking out. Which
she does start freaking out. I mean, but I think that they did play up that scene really well. I think just because
I agree with you.
Like, they were slipping on the blood on the floor, and it was kind of like the chest burster comes out of the guy's back, is all right, fine, you're doing that. And then like the other guy, it bursts out of his face. So it's like, all right, great, it's a face burster instead of a chest burster. It's a back burster, whatever.
Exactly.
And I do think that if they were focused a little bit more on the different stages and just maybe focusing on those a little bit, it would have made it something new. It wouldn't have made it so that it's like you're seeing the same evolution of the alien, you're seeing the same all of this stuff. So they're trying to do it just felt like everybody knows that it's like there's the face hugger, then the chest burster, then you get full alien. And if they would have just made some moderation on that, or maybe put some in between stages in there, that maybe Fassbender does more. Or maybe David does more experiments and evolves it past that. But because they streamlined it, it just really makes it so that like all the suspense is kind of taken away.
Well, I think, and that's part of the problem, which, you know, is something I wanted to talk about too, is like, I think with this movie, I very much had the feeling like, you know, at this point, it's like once I've seen one, I've kind of seen them all. Like, I was just, I felt like there were so many things. Like, if you're sort of just doing the same thing, I mean, that's what we're there to see, right? Like, obviously, Alien, there's a reason. But at this point, I think you're absolutely right. They're sort of not trying to, like, blow us away with anything new, which, again, it's a prequel. Like you said, what can you do? I mean, but they've already evolved them past the point of the first movie. So why not just go all the way, you know, which I think they kind of tried to do in Prometheus a little bit. But in this one, I think you're absolutely right that there's no surprises. And then, you know, the only surprise is kind of like how fast they're, you know, gestating, which they do to keep the plot going along, but they could have eliminated 45 minutes of like build up, you know, and then, you know, had that happen earlier on. It's just interesting. I mean, I just think I agree with you on that. My big thing was just like when the pilot Ferris, Amy Simetz's character, really starts freaking out, and she's presented as this hard ass, which, you know, you would be freaking out, but if you're sort of a military, I mean, she's presented as, I think she even said she was in the military or had been or something like that. And then she locks the doctor in, who is showing no symptoms at all. You know what I mean? But she's already exposed. Like,
I know she has blood splattered on her face. It doesn't.
I just feel like a lot of people, like when the stuff kind of goes down, kind of like acted completely out of character. And that was sort of like my big thing. Like, what are you doing? Why are you, especially when the thing starts coming out? You know, at that point you're like, all right, I'm a decent human being, I'm letting you out. You know what I mean?
But I mean, I I kind of like that part of her character, because she was going to keep her in there, and she was going to lock her in. And then she ended up, like, she saw that the creature, like, burst out. So she ran to get the gun first.
Yeah.
So she was sort of keeping her shit together, but she was like, yeah, she was definitely freaking out, like, quite a bit. But, yeah. I liked that character a lot. And it's like, and just because she was, like, kind of joking around with Danny McBride, and like when he was caught outside, she goes, can we just leave him out there? And it was like, that felt like a more real couple than a lot of the other ones. And so because she was Danny McBride's wife, I think I felt more about her because of that as because it's like, I'm like, oh, good on him. He gets a cool, like, you know, tough as nails wife that.
Yeah.
But well, then
really
he also said,
I wanted to see more.
Yeah. And then he also had, Danny McBride also has the line where he's like, she sounded scared. She's never scared. And that was really kind of powerful. It just showed that, like, the intensity of the situation and just like what Danny McBride must be, Tennessee must be going through in that time, because they're basically cut off. They don't know what's going on. They don't know who lives, who dies, what's happening.
Yeah. Cause the communication's like, down, as it often does.
Yeah. I did really like that scene where all hell breaks loose. The ship explodes there on the ground.
Yeah.
And they're basically trapped there it's kind of a typical Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like it's like a Star Trek kind of like plot.
Very much.
But
so,
it works very well here in this sort of situation.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, I think a lot of that stuff was well played out. I just remember that one scene, I'm like, you're locking her in the room. Like, I was like, that is cold, you know? Yeah. And I think there is a difference between sort of being like, oh my God, what is happening? An absolute freak out. And I just kind of, that was one of those things where it was a character that I just didn't believe that would just absolutely freak out like that at the first sign of trouble. But
yeah, that didn't bother me as much. I just saw her as someone who's conflicted with following protocol and also being a human being and not being able to leave her alone in there. So she like goes in and tries to save her.
She had no problem leaving her alone in there. She locked that door as soon as it, like, she was like, I am out of here.
She didn't know like a toothy monster was going to just burst out of his back. She just kind of was like, what's going on there? And then I just love the way they were like slipping on the blood and falling all over the place. And like, she goes to shoot it and she slips on the blood and like fires in the air. And it's just, that was a really like a real kind of like moment that you felt like that she's panicking right now. This is an intense situation. And that's what happens in those things. It's like you trip and fall and you're caught off guard and like in that situation. So I like that a lot, but then like moving on to when they follow David into the, into that temple, I just feel like that's when kind of logic is just kind of thrown out the window and it's just, all right, we need to kill five more cast members before, before we get out of there. And it's even when like later on and people have gone off to pee, people have gone off to wash off their wounds and they never come back and they die. At the end, they still split up.
Yeah.
And so it's like you get Damien Bashir, who is like, he's a cool actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in the Hateful Eight. He was the kind of like the guy with the thick accent and the big hat and the mustache.
I still have not seen The Hateful Eight.
Okay.
It's
well,
like a 3.5-hour movie. Yeah, I have time.
Yeah, with a kid, I know that's hard to manage that. But it's like he's really kind of underused and really under, like, I think he could have been. He was like the military guy. He's like the head of like the grunts, and I think they could have really put him to use a little bit more, but they just didn't have any room for him. It just feels like a lot of those guys were just kind of like just killed off because they needed like one or two people to survive so that they could have a final act. I mean, the fight between David and Walter, you knew that was coming.
I
could see the twist towards the end,
yeah,
coming from like a mile away,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, wait, before we get to that, we've got to discuss the real meat and potatoes of of like what this is all about, because this is the biggest problem that I had in the movie. And I actually put a post on my Facebook page after I saw it, which was basically saying, you don't need to explain everything. Like, I don't need to know everything about a thing in a movie or a movie franchise. And this, I think, more than any other Alien movie, maybe even more than Prometheus, I have to go back and watch Prometheus, really sort of goes into the explanation of how the aliens sort of ended up being what they are, or close to what they are in the first movie. And to me, I don't know about to you, to me, it was the dumbest explanation ever. Yeah. It was very much almost like a sort of thing of like, if I was younger, maybe in my teens or my 20s, and I was much more passionate human being, and I thought about movies the way that I did in my 20s, that it might almost ruin the franchise for me. Because I really feel, you know, what they, spoilers, if you're listening to this, hang up now, you know, take off your headphones. I mean, basically what you end up finding out is that David has been sort of breeding these things so that you can genetically engineer them into the sort of like perfect killing machine because of the fact that his creator, the man who created him, denied him or thought that he couldn't make art or music or poetry or whatever on his own. And so he kind of like did this because he was stuck on a planet with
daddy issues.
Yeah, big time daddy issues. And he's basically stuck on a planet with a bunch of killing machines that won't kill him because he's inorganic. He's not organic matter. They apparently, in this movie, it's revealed that they only go after organic matter. And so he can like hang out with the aliens. He can like, you know, go around them and, you know, and not be hurt. He's sort of like, like when you put Walking Dead guts on you in The Walking Dead, you know, you know what I mean? And they can't smell you. So that to me, when they broke that down, I was very much like, wow, that's dumb. You know, it didn't infuriate me, but I thought it was really like,
I do think that like everyone here wants to kind of like, it's all about surviving and procreating and like the next generation.
Yeah.
And like, that's where like the nugget of that frustration seems to have come from, both David and Walter, because David keeps pointing out to Walter that he has feelings for Daniels. Sure. But Walter keeps on saying, well, it's my duty to do that. That's what I'm programmed for. I don't love her. I just am very, you know, I protect her because she's one of my crew.
Yeah.
And that's like, I don't know. It's again, they seem to have evolved those things to a point, but then you go back to, Ian Holm in Alien, and he's back to where David is.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, he is the one saying like, he's admiring these animals, or these creatures, saying that they're the perfect killing machines. And so David is being a creator in doing that. He can't have kids. He can't do any of that stuff. Yeah. So he's creating in his way. They said that thing where, which also goes against a lot of the stuff where, basically he said, they ruined their world, so they're looking for another world to kind of go on to, and they're an obsolete species and they're dying out.
Yeah.
Which is like, if they're doing that, then what about Ripley's daughter back home, like from Aliens?
Yeah, exactly.
Like all of this stuff that
kind of doesn't make sense.
Yeah. If Earth is still there, like by the time you get to Aliens. And I think in Alien Resurrection, they almost bring the aliens
to Earth.
And then they end up destroying it. But still, it's like one of those things where Earth is still around all those years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in this one, it's like Earth is obsolete and Earth is like destroyed and they're trying to find a new, like a new planet. But,
well, it's really funny because they could have explained that away by saying like, I mean, Billy Crudup's character is sort of a religious believer, you know, and that's one of the things that they sort of say, like, that's why he's not confident, because he feels like the company doesn't believe in him. Because I guess in this future, if you are a person of faith, you're kind of seen as kind of a crackpot. But they could have easily written like that this was sort of a religiously funded expedition, or you know, there's so many ways you could have solved that, that there, that there's an area of the planet that is uninhabitable, so some people had to leave, you know, there, there's a lot of like that other stuff. And you're absolutely right, in the context of like the continuity of the whole, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
I wonder if there was a version of the script where they have Billy Crudup's character kind of admiring David as a creator, like as like almost like a god like figure, and kind of like going down that role where he's a believer in God, he's a believer in creators. And because the engineers are there, like their skeletons and stuff are there, but no one is even like looking for that, like no one pieces together that these are the guys that created. Like there's never that time where somebody's just like explaining that to these guys. And I think that that would be a powerful moment for him to be a man of faith, to find out that we're just like rejects it from a test tube for these engineers. You know, that would be a powerful moment for that, for him. And he's never given that. He's never given that kind of resolution. He just kind of walks in on David, who is kind of, like admiring his creation of this, like this white alien. And then like he kind of acts like the typical soldier and starts blowing away the alien and doing stuff like that. And then eventually falls for the old peek into the egg trick.
Exactly. Mr. Crudup, how dare you, Dr. Manhattan? How could you do it? It's really funny because, I mean, for me, obviously, and we're sort of like saying the, I mean, this movie definitely does have narrative problems and big problems, and had I had problems with, I mean, for me, the biggest thing of David genetic, having been the one to like genetically engineer, and the reasoning is pretty good. Like, I mean, I liked it, but the way it sort of played out for me was kind of just like, really, I don't, you know, I just wasn't buying it. Like I didn't, and I think that the filmmakers wanted that to be like a aha moment. Like, oh my goodness, isn't this interesting? And for me, it was like, no, this is kind of, you know, so he's been on that planet 10 years and he's been playing with the aliens, and now they're, that's the reason why they are, they kind of are what they are. Like, I just thought that that was, it just seemed kind of, I mean, not to disparage our hobby, but kind of like dopey comic book, you know, silliness, you know, and I just, I didn't really buy it. And for me, that falls into sort of the trope of like, you know, I've never seen it, but like the first Rob Zombie Halloween movie where people are telling me like, oh, they explained why Michael Myers, I don't need to know. Like, I don't need to know. These things exist, that all I need to know is that they want to kill you and they're scary. And as long as you do something good with that, then I'm fine. Like, you know, but you know, but at the core of the sort of like David Walter relationship, that I did find fascinating. Like that I liked a lot, like when they faced off and they talked. But again, I thought that some of their scenes just crawled to a halt.
It did. It did. And I do think that there could have been some other way for them to do that. Maybe they were in communication with each other, like from the ship, and they didn't, like the rest of them didn't know they were in communication with each other, or while they're doing all this stuff. But it really did feel like, and when the camera was off of the other people, they weren't doing anything. It's like they all powered down, and then like you get this scene with them, and then you move on, and then you finally remember, oh yeah, there's like five other people here in this temple somewhere, and we have to kill those guys. We have to kill at least three or four of them off. Exactly. Yeah, and then I did like, I mean, I think that by the time it gets to the end when Danny McBride kind of flies in, I was like talking to Nick, because I went to see it with Sleazy G there today. And so we were talking as this was going on a little bit, because it was like an empty theater. We saw it at 11 o'clock today. And it just seemed weird that that giant ship only had one like spaceship like little mini spaceship on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think that if it was, if they were, I don't know, you would think there would be a backup ship or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That they could do that. It just to have one
second shuttle. Yeah.
To just have one shuttle, it just seems kind of just dumb.
Yeah.
But they'll have like three trucks.
Yeah.
And so they rejigger that, that some other kind of transport ship, and Danny McBride goes flying out to the rescue.
Yeah.
Onto the thing. That was, I liked that scene.
Yeah,
I think
me
that
too.
That was a really tense scene.
Yeah.
It really showed, Daniel's, like, the strength of Daniel's character. Like, she gets everybody inside, and then, like, she doesn't even hesitate. She goes out there, she gets, she has the machine gun, and she's strapping herself onto the side of the spaceship, and Danny McBride's trying to get everything. They capture it in the claw, the giant
scoop. Yeah.
That whole thing is done really well.
Yeah,
it was really big budget, kind of like Jim Cameron, big budget kind of excitement, using like hardware and military stuff and just like really like tactile kind of action where it's like you're flying all around and doing stuff. And I think that whole scene, I think, was done really well.
Yeah.
And then, like, I liked it. I did. And then you think it's over. You think they're all heading back.
Yep.
I just think they're good. I just thought, like, David was going to show his hand and that'll be it. But then, like, of course, they get back and there's another alien inside the other guy.
Yep.
And so you get that all over again.
It took sort of like a longer time to gestate than anyone else, but whatever.
Yeah. The other one, I mean, it took Billy Crudup like 5 seconds. And then like with him, it's long enough so that he can get onto the other ship.
Yeah, exactly. And get in the shower with his girlfriend.
Yeah. And, well, no, that wasn't him.
Oh no, that wasn't him. That's right. That was a different.
That was Damien Bashir's character. He's
right.
Because he had the facehugger on him for like a couple of seconds.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I guess it took just long enough to he got one egg planted in him, even though like he got the facehugger off of him pretty quickly.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, then the couple die in the shower, and then...
It was a crazy scene. I actually liked that scene, but it was really funny because you saw the alien tail sort of like almost going up between her legs, and I was like, oh, they're not going to go there. They're not going to go there. And they almost did, but they didn't. So I was like, oh, all right.
Well, I do think that then it started to be like Alien, where... they're trapping the alien in the different rooms and they're like opening doors and closing doors and leading him in a certain way and hurting the alien. And that's straight out of the first Aliens movie. And so once again, we're like almost an hour 45 into this movie.
Yeah.
And again, they're copying something from the first Alien.
Yeah.
We aren't into new territory yet. That kind of disappointed me by that time. And so like I liked the scene with Danny McBride and with Tennessee and Daniels where they're fighting him in the garage with the trucks. But after that one scene that was so well done, it's almost like, why did you have to add on that extra thing at the end there just to...
Well,
you know, just for one more action scene to make it 2 hours.
Oh, basically. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Like the scene. Yeah. I mean, well, obviously they were leading to the big sort of reveal at the end and they needed something, some filler between the big fight on the planet to the big twist. And, so I can see why they stuck that action scene in there because it would have been like a really big flaw for them to sort of have it be like them talking and I can't wait to get home and you know, all this other stuff. I mean, maybe you're probably right. I mean, they probably could have just gone up on the ship and that turn happen and you'd be like, oh, and shaved like maybe 15 minutes off. But I actually kind of liked that bit, but it's funny because like you were talking about the twist or the turn that happens before. I mean, I am like you. I saw it coming a mile away. I mean, they weren't very subtle about it. But I think what was kind of interesting about it was when it was going to happen. Because I thought it was going to happen during when the alien was out. And when, Walter, David, whatever, you know, actually helps them fight the alien, you're sort of kind of like, oh, okay, you know, everything's fine. And then they just wait to the very last minute. And I thought, okay, that's kind of cool. I mean, you saw it coming from a mile away, but the way it plays out, I was like, dude, that's fucking dark.
That was ballsy. It was ballsy that they ended it on such a dark note. I agree. I think that I liked it. Anybody who like you and I both went through the clone conspiracy with the Spider-Man thing, or any other movie where there's a double and the double knocks out the good one and then poses as the good guy. Yeah. It's the evil one poses as the good one. You just know what happens. Yeah.
Scene where they're fighting and they cut like right before the end of the fight. And it's like...
It's almost like I was waiting for that scene where it's like they're both fighting and like Daniels comes in with a machine gun and she's like, which one do I shoot? And like, he's no, get this guy. Oh, and like, no, get God. This guy.
Thank God.
I was waiting for that scene, which thankfully they didn't do that scene there. But it is like, once again, it's another, it felt like just a lot of tropes that you've seen in a million other movies, just kind of laced in there. And I agree, though, the ending, when they revealed that it was not Walter who escaped the planet with them, but it's David, and that basically everybody's going to die on that ship. Like they're all going to be infected with aliens. That's interesting to me. I'm wondering, I don't know where that they were supposed to be headed.
I don't remember the name of the planet, but it
started with an O. Anyway, I'm wondering if that is kind of like a reference to one of the planets that they end up that ends up being taken over by aliens. Get there. I don't know if it's tied together or not. I don't know the names of all the sectors and planets that they visited. But the thing that I don't know. I did like a lot of that, the ending there. That was ballsy, for a big budget summer action movie to end on such a really downer of a note. That was pretty ballsy for them to do.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I really felt like, I felt that was just like a, even though you knew it was coming, the way it played out, you kind of were like, okay, when is this going to happen? And then the way it happened, I was like, all right. Because I mean, I do sort of like dark horror. I really like one of my favorite, zombie movie. I love like zombie stuff and I love, 28 Days Later, but one of the big things that I don't like is the ending. I think it's like too positive a note. I like my zombie movies to end in like an absolutely like, this is the end of the world. We're all screwed. Like
28 weeks later.
Exactly.
When the zombies like running through the tunnel and they make it to the other side.
Exactly. I mean, that's definitely. And so for that, I definitely appreciated this movie. And as a whole, I mean, it sounds like a lot of horror, they just have like all this dopey stuff and I feel like there was a lot of dopiness going on in this movie. From the beginning when they don't put masks on and they go to the planet, I'm like, no, you just don't. That's not something you do. You wear a mask, you have a spacesuit, you keep yourself decontaminated. So that's sort of the sort of big, sort of stereotypical, stupid move that the protagonists make. It happens in all horror. So, I was willing to let it go, but I mean, I'm going to say this was a beautiful movie to look at. Like you said, the action sequences towards the end and when the aliens did attack, they were pretty spectacular. So, I mean,
I even liked the scenes where they were in the wheat fields and the aliens were starting to kind of come out and Fassbender scares them away with the flare. I think that was really good too. That was kind of cool. I think Ridley Scott still has some good stuff in him. It's interesting though. I got a really like a Blade Runner feel almost because this was so much focusing on the synthesoids or like the synthetic characters where it's like, there were a lot of philosophical kind of conversation about about like what makes a human being, and can you make an artificial human being with feelings and emotions and all that
Westworld stuff.
Westworld,
yeah, Westworld.
Yeah, I mean, and it feels, but it feels a lot like the stuff that they covered in Blade Runner, like all those times ago. I am glad that someone else is directing the new Blade Runner, and it's not really Scott, because I think that something like that should be, I have more hope for it, because I just feel like Ridley Scott kind of has, they've done what they need to do with this franchise. Yeah, and I don't know what can they do next? I think that honestly, the only thing I can see it playing out is actually having the aliens get to Earth and seeing what it does to Earth.
Well, that wasn't that originally supposed to be like the third or the fourth Aliens movie? Like that was sort all those years ago, there was some rumors, and I think there was even a poster or something somewhere key art or something, and it said like Alien, and there was the planet Earth underneath it, and you're like, oh damn, and then Alien 3 also became something completely different, and I think there was even maybe a Dark Horse comic that's called like Aliens Earth War or something like mm-hmm. that, so idea has been floating around a lot. I think you're right, and I said it before, but I really get the feeling that like sort of like, and this is probably why I never tracked down the Predator Aliens movie. I just feel like once you've seen one at this point, you've kind of seen them all, and they're not really. And this is definitely indicative of that. It's definitely indicative of the fact that they're not really trying to do much new. They're just sort of like rehashing old ideas. Really good at the rehash, though. They're good at being able to rehash it.
I mean, it's big budget. They put millions of dollars into this, and I'm sure it made its money back this weekend, which is great. I don't want to not see another Alien. I just want to see somebody come in with a fresh idea rather than just rehashing parts from like from Prometheus and Alien and Aliens. I think that you can do more stuff with this stuff. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like they've done stuff with James Bond movies. They've done stuff with other movies, movies.
They keep doing stuff with zombies that turn out to be interesting. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I just recently saw A Girl with All the Gifts, and
I want to see that.
That kind of evolves the zombie kind of story in a kind of a interesting, new, logical kind of way. And so I think all it takes is like a fresh mind, and I just. Unfortunately, maybe have Ridley Scott as a producer, but and I don't know if Neil Blomkamp is the one to do it either, because I think that really it just feels almost like fan service to bring Hicks and Newt back. It's more like what do you call it? Not cosplay, but what like is
wish
the
fulfillment or
fanfic. It feels like it's like a what if story or something, and that's just that I don't know. It would just make things really. It would cloud things up a little bit.
I almost think like if the thing that you really wanted to do is maybe hybridize them with humans or make them sort of intelligent, like that would be horrifying. Like if you came up with an alien, like something went wrong, and almost like the Brood from the X-Men, and they were like, which obviously the Brood is a knockoff of Alien, but but if you did something like that, where they're intelligent and they've sort of got plans of their own, and they're not just like sort of ruthless beasts. Cause I think that's sort of the thing too, that's kind of like, failing it at this point. I mean, it lasted for a long time, but at this point they're just sort of like random killing machines that you don't really feel any sympathy or have any sort of plan behind them.
Well, Aliens kind of killed that too. They made them a hive. They made them like worker drones for a queen, and they killed them off way too easily in Aliens. I mean, for all, as good as Aliens is, I mean, it made this unstoppable like monster from Alien, like into just like basically target practice for these guys. It made it almost into a video game. So I think that really took a lot of the wind out of the sails of, as far as like threats for these guys. I mean, what would happen if an alien like was gestating inside of a synthetic human? You know, what would that create? And it's, if they go into like weird areas like that, I'd like to see, you know, if David says, well, I'm better than human. I'm the next step than that. Then why wouldn't they want to try to mate or try to like reproduce with me?
Let's get nasty aliens.
So he makes a bunch of synthetic people, and then he tries to introduce the alien into them. And that kind of, maybe that is why, the aliens kind of, like devolve a little bit. I don't know. Just like how Walter was not really in some ways he was an improvement over David, but David was like, they got it right the first time. And then later they decided to take away from it because it caused too many problems. Yeah. Maybe that same sort of theme will go with these aliens to kind of slow them down.
I don't know, but again,
it's like there are people that are paid millions of dollars to hypothesize about these things, and it's like it's frustrating that like you and I can sit here and brainstorm and come up with some ways on some of these things.
Absolutely. Well, you know, see, that's what you got to do, is you got to make your own like little alien story, not call it aliens, and then, you know, put it out there and be like, yeah, this is the badass alien story that you could never make.
Yes. Yeah, that's, and you know, that's, I like District 12, District 13. District 9, number that was. I thought that was a great sci-fi movie. And there are a lot of like Moon was great. And I think but a lot of them owe a lot to Alien, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's interesting to see that evolution. I mean, you and I probably have seen a million like Alien knockoffs that were made all through the 80s after Alien came out. It's just like everybody wanted to make that monster in the, you know, that alien creature in the ship kind of story. So there are tons of those movies out, and it's like I review them every now and then when they're re-released. Yeah. They're horrible. Like they're horrible knockoffs of those, but they're still kind of fun in that, like, the Alien created a lot of that stuff. It was like the hybrid of sci-fi and horror.
Incredibly influential movie. I mean, it's really influenced a lot of stuff that you and I both love. So, I mean, obviously Ridley Scott with this and like Blade Runner, like you mentioned, he still is a really, you know, great director. I just think that the writing in this could have been better. You know, there's a lot of like plot points and like we've gone over, but I mean, Rotten Tomatoes sort of like had it hovering around like 70%. And, and for me, that's sort of fair. Like, I think that's fair. Like, 70% is good. Sort of like a B minus, or, you know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, I'd maybe see it again. I don't know.
I'd see it again just to see some reaction to people. I would like to see if people get what's going on, like towards the end. And I like knowing what the twist that's coming up, and then just like kind of watching other people's reactions to that. I would be interested to see like how my friends and how they would react to that twist at the end. It's a perfectly fine summer blockbuster movie, and it's like if I'm looking for something like Silence of the Lambs or the first Alien, or, you know, a horror movie that is kind of like it makes its mark as like not just another in a franchise, but it just kind of like it stands alone as like something that's an amazing kind of film that's going to be copied a million times afterwards.
No, it's a sequel. It doesn't redefine anything. You know what I mean? It's a sequel. Yeah. I mean, that's it. It's basically a sequel. If you like maybe the first two Alien movies, you know, you're probably going to like this one. If you like the Alien Predator one, you know, you'll probably love this one. But I think you're right. There's nobody's writing home about Alien Covenant. You know what I mean? But it is a fun time at the movies. If you want to go to the movies and you want to like see a sci-fi thing there, I don't think there's anything wrong with this. I really liked it, you know?
And there are kiddies out there who, just, you know, they don't like to see movies that are like more than 10 years old or 20 years old. Oh, God. And it's like with Alien coming out, I think it was, when did Alien come out? In the
1979.
It's like, that's like, for some kids who are in theaters now, it's like, that's like 20 years earlier than some of these kids are born.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And it's like, for them, this might be their first Alien movie that they ever see, and they think it's amazing, and that's great, but it's like, if that's the case, and you've seen Alien Covenant, and you were blown away with it, and you haven't seen Alien, or Aliens, both of them, just, you know, go see that. But if you haven't seen that, then what are you doing listening to the podcast?
Exactly. You know? It's don't like, listen to us. Go, go watch those movies. All
do,
right.
do your homework.
All right. Well, my name is Christian Horn. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast about Alien Covenant. My guest is Mark L. Miller, who is in charge of the horror section at Ain't It Cool News. You should read it every Friday, and you should read the comic review column every Wednesday at Ain't It Cool, because this man is in charge of them both, and he is a great individual. He's always been great to me. And
Oh, shucks.
And you should check out his comics. Which ones? What are we talking about here? We've got, Pirouette is not happening.
Pirouette might be coming out sooner rather than later. The rest of it was in a stalling pattern for a while, but I've got a new book. Yeah, I mean, I've got a new book that's coming out here in later in the year from Black Mask. I can't talk much more about it other than just that it exists. But it's a horror book. It's going to be focusing on some really kind of gnarly, kind of grim and gritty, grindhousey kind of horror stuff. So I'm looking forward to it, and just see, because I'm a fan of horror comics, and I think that I would like to see like some kind of resurgence in horror, in comics and horror. It seems like it's happening, like with like Colin Bund has been doing some good stuff, and Steve Niles always does some good stuff, and there are people that are really experimenting with horror stuff that I think that it more so now than ever before. So it's good to see that, and so I'm hoping to kind of add to that with a twisted tale of my own. But
but the Jungle
right
Book
now,
is still out there.
Jungle Book, I'm still kind of like inching along with that.
But people can still pick it up, right? Like it's Avatar, right?
No, it's Zenoscope.
Oh, Zenoscope, sorry.
Yeah, and it basically retells a story. It's basically Game of Thrones with animals. That's the way I kind of sell it.
That's a great book. I like that one a lot.
thanks. Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. I've been writing those characters for like, it's more than any character that I've written ever. It's like I've written 3 miniseries and 2 specials with them.
That's great.
And so I'm hoping to get another special out, and then that will lead into another miniseries, hopefully for that. But it just depends when Zenoscope decides to kind of do that. So whenever they have a hole in the schedule, I can kind of squeeze in my next Jungle Book story, I'll do it. But if the fans ask for it, I'll do it. And it seems to have a little bit of a fan following, so I'm glad to hear that.
Well, I really enjoy everything you do. I've liked it from the beginning. You've always been a good pal to me, so I appreciate you coming on to my podcast to talk about this film, because it's great chatting too. So,
but I'm glad I saw it today and was able to recall it so much because I see so many movies sometimes that it all just blends together. So I'm glad I didn't see it like in between like a Bigfoot movie and a killer clown movie or something. And I'm confusing them all. So this was fresh in my head this time.
Right. Well, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Alien Covenant chat. Thank you for listening. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all that good stuff. Shoot us an email at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And thank you for listening, and I will have another episode up soon. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Fanboy.com.